Picture a Sunday evening in early March 2020. Your phone rings with news that will reshape millions of lives. For Governor Andrew Cuomo, that call announced New York's first confirmed COVID-19 case and the beginning of a battle that would test every assumption about leadership, government, and what Americans could accomplish together. Within days, the federal response crumbled, testing bottlenecked through a single CDC lab producing faulty results. The administration's focus remained fixed on Asia while the real threat silently circulated from Europe through JFK and Newark airports. This wasn't just a policy failure. It was America's Pearl Harbor moment, an intelligence catastrophe that would ultimately claim 10 times more American lives than that infamous 1941 attack. New York stood alone at the epicenter, forced to build an entire pandemic response system from scratch while the nation watched. When crisis strikes, people don't need sugarcoating. They need honesty. Cuomo's daily briefings became appointment viewing, not through political theater, but through relentless factual transparency. The challenge was communicating terrifying data while maintaining public confidence. His daughter Mariah captured it perfectly. "Don't tell me to relax, tell me why I should be relaxed." New Yorkers are famously skeptical. Nothing feels real until it happens in their backyard. That changed with New Rochelle, where lawyer Lawrence Garbus became patient zero, unknowingly spreading the virus through a bat mitzvah, a funeral, his law office, and public transportation before anyone understood what was happening. If COVID could explode in suburban New Rochelle, nowhere was safe. The briefings evolved into something unprecedented, government officials presenting complex epidemiological data that ordinary citizens actually wanted to watch, building a relationship between leadership and community that would prove essential for survival. Testing became the first battlefield. With CDC protocols capping capacity at 400 tests daily, New York's Wadsworth Center developed its own test, securing FDA approval by late February, the first non-CDC test authorized. The goal? 50,000 daily tests. Within 2 weeks, 8 top-tier labs were operational. By mid-March, 850 collection sites and 250 laboratories formed a testing infrastructure built in weeks. Hospital projections revealed a crisis. 110,000 to 140,000 beds needed at the apex against 53,000 available statewide, including only 3,000 ICU beds. Cuomo ordered hospitals to increase capacity by 50% and halt elective surgeries. Even reaching 75,000 beds would meet just 60% of projected need. Ventilators became the currency of survival. New York had 4,000 to 6,000 ventilators, but needed 30,000 more. The federal stockpile held only 10,000 for the entire nation. With federal response stalled, Cuomo mobilized every resource, calling business leaders, diplomats, anyone with Chinese manufacturing contacts. Teams explored desperate alternatives, converting BiPAP machines, splitting ventilators between patients, even preparing manual AMBU bags as last resort. President Trump dismissed urgent ventilator requests as personal attacks, mocking them on Fox News while insisting COVID was just like the flu that would magically disappear with warm weather. The European travel ban announced March 12 came months too late. Genetic analysis later confirmed the virus had circulated in New York since January. The chaotic announcement triggered mass airport overcrowding as infected travelers rushed home, creating superspreader conditions. Facing a 110,000-bed need against 53,000 capacity, Cuomo drew inspiration from Churchill's Dunkirk rescue. The Surge and Flex plan treated all 100-plus hospitals as a single unified organism. Working with Northwell's Michael Dowling, they created a hospital capacity coordination committee operating 24/7. Any hospital could request transfers, staff, PPE, or ventilators through a hotline. Staffed by health officials, hospital executives, and National Guard logistics experts, the HCCC balanced patient loads, centralized purchasing, and facilitated thousands of patient transfers, transforming competition into collaboration under crisis conditions. The briefings sparked an unexpected outpouring of support. Thousands of handmade masks arrived daily with heartfelt letters, what Cuomo called his B12 shot for the soul. They displayed these as self-portrait of America, showcasing unity amid crisis. Henry Winkler called after learning Cuomo was a Fonz fan. Hillary Clinton, Robert Redford, and Winston Churchill's granddaughter reached out with praise. But the most moving messages came from ordinary citizens. Kansas farmer Dennis Runke sent one of his 5 N95 masks for a New York healthcare worker, keeping 4 because his wife had only one lung. When Cuomo read the letter at a briefing, reporters tracked down Runke, generating press that led Kansas State University to award him the degree he'd abandoned decades earlier to care for his dying mother. Each COVID death took a piece of Cuomo's soul, especially essential workers who died because he'd determined their services had to continue. These weren't statistics. They were human beings whose sacrifices made survival possible for millions. 6 weeks after New York's first case, the curve flattened faster than any expert predicted. Despite projections of needing 110 to 140,000 hospital beds, New York never exceeded 19,000, less than one-fifth of the forecast. By mid-April, mounting evidence convinced Cuomo that masks were far more effective than initially claimed. Growing skeptical of experts who'd missed the virus's European pathway, he became the first governor to mandate masks in public spaces, a significant risk that could have triggered massive backlash. Comprehensive antibody testing vindicated the decision with counterintuitive results. Essential workers had markedly lower infection rates than the general population. NYC police showed 10.5% infection versus 19.9% citywide. Emergency room doctors and nurses, just 12%. Transit workers and grocery employees showed similar patterns. The explanation? PPE worked, particularly masks, which prevented both transmission and inhalation. This finding fundamentally challenged initial assumptions and shaped national public health policy. When people understood the science and had clear guidance, they rose to the challenge, defying cynical predictions about American individualism. Reopening demanded precision. Cuomo assembled health experts and data scientists to create the nation's most comprehensive reopening plan, tracking infection rates, hospital capacity, testing volumes, and contact tracing capabilities. New York divided into 10 regions, each meeting 7 metrics before reopening: 14 days of declining hospitalizations and deaths, fewer than 2 new hospitalizations per 100,000 residents, maintaining 30% hospital and ICU capacity, achieving 30 tests per 1,000 residents monthly, and establishing 30 contact tracers per 100,000 residents. Reopening followed 4 phases: construction and manufacturing first, then retail, restaurants, and entertainment, separated by mandatory 2-week monitoring periods. A 156-page manual detailed everything from PPE requirements to workplace protocols. All metrics appeared on a public dashboard, allowing every New Yorker to track real-time progress, unprecedented transparency that built trust. Global experts from the University of Minnesota and Imperial College London independently reviewed data before approving advancement. This wasn't political theater. It was governance based on data, science, and accountability. After 110 consecutive days of briefings, something profound had shifted. Experts underestimated New Yorkers, who forged genuine community when stopping community spread required actual community. COVID exposed America's underlying weaknesses. Divisions and government incompetence allowed the virus to ravage the nation. Real progressivism proves aspirations are achievable. Government can work to realize goals like marriage equality, higher minimum wages, and affordable housing. The pandemic created a potentially transformational political moment, making government relevant in ways not seen since the Great Depression. Progressives can change politics for the next 50 years, but only by delivering results, not just words. As reopening begins, we must recognize COVID-19 has permanently reshaped our nation. Rather than returning to how things were, we must seize this opportunity to build back better, transforming health, education, housing, and economic systems. Most urgently, we need restructured public health infrastructure with clear governmental responsibilities, early detection systems, and organizations operating free from political interference. This isn't the end, but only the beginning, a new confidence in what we can accomplish together when leadership meets the moment.